Okay. A. Malcolm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get this ball rolling. Okay, guys, welcome back to Bannets, Bonnets, and Kilts, or welcome to the 7th episode of Bannets, Bonnets, and Kilts. I'm your host, Jenny Coco Cure. If you are just joining us for the first time, welcome. If you are a returning fan, welcome back. This is our full recap episode of Outlander Season 3, Episode 6, entitled A. Malcolm. And this episode of Outlander is written by Matthew B. Roberts and directed by Norma Bailey. The episode is airing October 22nd, 2017. Okay, guys, my initial thoughts on this episode before I start with my recap. Full disclosure, I've watched the whole episode from beginning to end a total of 3 times. I've gone and rewound certain parts and checked out other parts more than that, but the full episode from beginning to end, I've given it 3 full views. My first viewing was when it first was released. When it dropped, I was there and waiting to jump on it. And I watched it, and my first reaction was disappointment. I'm not gonna lie. I can't sugarcoat it, guys. Sorry. I'm a book reader, and it was not as good as the book. That's what I have to say about it. First viewing was really like, my face was on the floor, disappointment. Then the second viewing, I liked it better. There was more that I captured that second viewing, and I was able to go, okay, I appreciated certain aspects. I was able to appreciate it more because I had gotten that first viewing out of the way and I was able to absorb more. Then the third viewing, I liked it a little bit better, even after the third viewing. So after 3 viewings, I can say that it was still a decent episode, a good episode of Outlander, but I still have to say I am still left a little disappointed with how they handled the reunion. I just am. It's just so different from what happens in the book. And when I say different, I don't mean good different, because some changes they made in this episode from the book were very good. For instance, the way they handled Mr. Willoughby, thank God. Oh my God, I was so scared. I was so nervous about how they were going to handle Mr. Willoughby. Because if you might have heard about the complaints about Mr. Willoughby, even if you're not a book reader, in the book, Mr. Willoughby is a problem. And I knew that from the first read, when I was reading about Mr. Willoughby, I was disturbed by it. I'm like, oh gosh, this is uncomfortable. I don't like this character. I don't like the way this character is written. He was very cartoony in the book. So for him to not be like that on the show, brilliant. Thank God. Thank you guys for understanding and realizing that that was going to not go over well, on the show. I think even Diana had to know that. So she couldn't, I would doubt she would have a problem with one of her characters being changed so drastically, but I'm glad they did it. I'm really glad, because the Willoughby that I saw from the show, and Claire acknowledging, because in the book, Claire, she was not that respectful of Mr. Willoughby on the first meeting, and in the show, she was. So before I get into all of that, let me just, say that I did like that change. But there are some changes, guys, mostly dealing with the emotion and the handling of the reunion itself and how they reacted when they came back together, I just left me cold. All right, we're going to go ahead and get this recap started. All right. They start the episode not with the title card this time. They start the episode this time with a prelude, I guess you could say, and kind of like a little preliminary bit of the show. It starts out with Jamie getting his stock straightened, his neckerchief is what I call it, straightened out, and by a woman. The woman is saying, "We can't have you going out up High Street with your stock half hanging out." And he said, "Well, you're at the advantage of being on eye level with it." And she says, "Well, perhaps it's just that you need a woman's touch, you know." And she's being a bit flirty, I can observe. And Jamie's okay with this flirting, you know. He says, "I won't argue with that." So he's putting on his scarf and his hat. No kiss, no hug. So there's not a romantic relationship. At least that's the impression we get. But as she's looking after him as he leaves, you're allowed to assume that she is at the very least attracted to him. So anyway, he leaves. He's out and about now, walking down the street, headed, I guess, towards his print shop. It's morning time. He's nodding to everyone as he passes them by. He looks good. He's dapper. He's definitely aged. You can see that clearly. I like the way they handled his aging. It's subtle, but it is not aggressive. It is not a lot of aging. It's still Jamie. He's still good looking, very good looking, actually. I'd wager that he looks more manly. Because young Jamie, younger Jamie, and even Sam Heughan himself can sometimes look a little girly in the face, just a bit. But the way that they have him looking now, he looks like a man. He looks like a older man, and I appreciate it. I like it. So anyway, he's walking down the street all confident. He reaches his shop. You know, he sees his sign, gives it a little check and wipes off a little smudge and then goes on into his shop. He's just kind of, you know, putting his coat away, looking around at things, and he hears a noise coming from the back. And I guess he thinks maybe someone has broken in, and he takes a knife out of his coat. And he's, you know, kind of walking slowly, like trying to see who's, you know, in there. And he hears some whispering and noise, and I think he figures out that it's someone he knows. So he puts his knife away and says, "Come on out." So they come out. He says, "The stench of seaweed and whiskey gave you away." So they come out. They look like a couple of ragamuffins, a couple of shady dudes. So they were like, "It's just us, McDoo." And apparently, of course, they know each other. He said, "Did anyone see you coming in here? You know I can't be seen with dealing with the likes of you." He's like, "No, it was dark when we came in." It was two of them, by the way. And one of them said, "No one saw us. It was really dark, and they wouldn't recognize us." And they said, "Young Ian told us that we could sleep here in the print shop because we lost our room at the boarding house, and we had been sleeping in the coach down by the docks." That's the first mention of young Ian. If you will recall, young Ian is Jenny and Ian's daughter, Jamie's sister, Jenny, and her husband's, son, their last son, their youngest son, the one that we saw that Jamie was holding when the red coat officers busted into Lollybrock. Now young Ian is apparently grown up and is helping his uncle out with some stuff and telling people that they can sleep in the print shop. Okay, that's interesting to note. Jamie decides to give these gentlemen some pamphlets to take out and distribute to some gentleman who is a papist. Apparently, the papists think differently than the other English people, or I think the English people are free church or not Catholic, Christian, just missionary. I don't know what their what their religion is, but they're obviously not papists, which is Catholic, and they have a problem with the papists. So this pamphlet that Jamie had printed apparently has some information about something that would concern papists. So, and he told them to be careful when they pass these out, because if you're caught with them, you're going to hang. They said, we'll be careful. As they are getting this stuff together, someone else comes in. It's Jamie's assistant, Jordy. He says, you know, I would love to come to work and not have to deal with the likes of you guys. He's kind of haughty-taughty. You know, he's being real, you know, snobby to these guys. The guys are not taking it seriously. They're laughing at him, especially laughing at the fact that he has a growth on his neck. Now, the growth on his neck is about the size of a grapefruit. It is huge. It's covered by his stock or neckerchief, but you can see the very obvious bulge on the side. And one of them calls it a boil. He says, that boil's getting pretty big. You might want to bust that thing. And Jordy is like, it is not a boil, it's a goiter, and it's not contagious. And the other one said, and this one, I ain't gonna lie, when he said this line, I had to put the episode on pause and give myself a break to laugh for about 10 minutes, because this cracked me up. He said, excuse me, you got a small child hanging from your every word. My God. I'm like, okay, I know Jamie's the mature one here, but how can he not laugh at that? Man, I'd have been on the floor. That was hilarious. That was a good one. But anyway, you know, Jordy is like, you know what, I have to tolerate, you know, the fact that you do business with these shady characters, but does that mean I have to put up with their abuse? And Jamie's like, no, you don't. And he told them to apologize, and they did. Oh, we're just playing, which is just fun. He says, well, you might think it's, Jordy says, you might think it's fun, but I don't find that funny. Okay, whatever. So they end up leaving, and Jordy gets ready to start working. But Jamie says, before you get started, Jordy, could you go get some wood ash, you know, for the press or whatever? And Jordy's like, oh, yeah, sure. But, you know, it might be nice if in the evenings you could tell me what kind of chores or errands you want me to run so I can do them before I get here, so I don't have to retravel my steps. So it's quite clear at this point that Jordy is just a dick. So Jamie goes, okay, and Jordy leaves. So Jamie proceeds to start, you know, pressing, you know, doing his thing. You know, they show him setting up the plate with the ink and the paper and all that stuff, and how he has to put it all together and then puts it underneath the plate, the thing that presses it down and makes the print go onto the page. It's very physical, you know, and he's doing it like a pro. So anyway, he's been at it, I guess, for a minute at a certain point. And he's reading over some of the pages that he has completed when he hears the chime of the bell over his door again. And he yells out, is that you, Jordy? Now, if you will remember, this is the moment where Claire has walked in. He doesn't realize that, though. He's thinking Jordy has come back. He says, as he's still studying his page, he's like, what does he say? He says, it took you long enough, you know, and then a few seconds later, he's taking a drink from his mug of ale. And he says, where'd you go to get the ash? Glasgow, you know, and he hears this very sweet feminine voice that says, it's not Jordy. It's me. And he looks up slowly, kind of puts his cup down. He turns. And then he looks up at the little over landing on the second level, and he sees Claire staring down at him. And he kind of looks and he's shocked. And she's like, you know, smiling down at him with tears in her eyes. And he backs up into the table and then knocks over everything and promptly passes out. It looks a little different from his vantage than it did from her vantage, but whatever, not important. So anyway, that's when the whole Skyboat Song stars in the show credits began to roll, or the beginning credits. So then we get to the title card finally, and the title card is basically just showing him printing some pages, and the pages have the director and the writer of the episode listed on it. So kind of corny, but anyway. Then after the title card, we show the first moment of them being in each other's presence. Jamie is coming too. You can see his, from his vantage point, his vision come clear as he's looking up at Claire, and she's over him asking him if he's all right. And he grasps her hand and he says, "You're real." And she responds, "So are you." And he's squeezing her hand and he says, "Claire." And she's looking down at him and she's smiling. And she says, "I thought you were dead." And says something else. I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank. But anyway, eventually he reaches down and touches his crotch. And he starts, but then he says, "Oh, I thought I had lost all my faculties there for a second and pissed myself, but I just dropped the ale pot." So he gets up and she stands up as well, and he starts to undo his pants, but then he looks at her and he says, "Is this okay?" And she says, "Oh, of course. I mean, we are still married, aren't we?" And he gives this really pregnant pause. And I mean, such a pregnant pause that if I were her, I'd be like, "Well, are we?" Because it was a really long pause. But then he finally says, "Yes, we are." So he undoes his pants, takes them off, and then he approaches her. And he reaches for her hand and notices that she's still wearing his ring. She says, "I never took it off." And he has this little look on his face like it's good that she never took it off. And then he looks at her, and then I think he just has this overwhelming need to kiss her. He starts breathing hard and he moves on her. And she kind of looks startled, I guess, for a bit. And then he pauses and he says, "Sorry, I just want to kiss you. I would like to kiss you. Is that okay? Or may I?" And she says, "Yes, yes, you may." And then very slowly he goes in for that kiss. And right before his lips touches hers, he says, "I have not done this for a very long time." And at that moment, you see a little tear slip out of Claire's eye as their lips meet. And it's a very, it's a very tame kiss. It's a lip close kiss, you know, him on the bottom lip, her on the top lip kiss. Yeah. Closed mouth, no tongue. Kind of meh to me. And when they're done, he gets a little more emotional. He says, "I've dreamed of you. I've seen you so many times in my dreams when I was with fever and thought that I must die. You came to me every time, and you were there. You helped me, but you never touched me." And she said, "Well, I can touch you now." And she does, and he's touching her. And, you know, this moment is more emotional. I'm feeling it more than I had been, because before it was so measured and so, like, held back, I felt. But at this moment, it gets more emotional and I'm feeling it more. And then she says, "Do not be afraid." And then he kind of, you know, gets emotional, recognizing that's their thing. That's what they say to each other. And then he says, "There's the two of us now." And at this point is when you notice that he's actually crying. And then they start to kiss again. And then you hear this, I quit. They break apart. Jamie looks up over at that landing that Claire had first stood at, and he sees Jordy. Jordy's up there looking down at them with disgust on his face, like, I'm a free church, and you might be an immoral papist, but having orgies in the shop is too much, and I quit. And then they hear the bells ringing in the background, and he says, and it's not even noon yet. And then he turns and he leaves, and Jamie's standing up looking at him, and Claire's behind him trying not to laugh. And when he turns and looks at her and sees that she's holding in a laugh, he kind of laughs too. So it's a cute moment, but I just liked it better in the book, man. Everything. Okay, I'm getting ready to make my book comparisons about this whole scene. In the book, when Jamie passes out and Claire notices that he falls rather gracefully for a man his size, and she goes over to, you know, help him make sure he's okay, he comes to, you know, rather quickly. And when he's like, Claire, you're real. And she's like, yes. And they're touching and they're squeezing and they're crying, both of them, just sobbing on the floor as he's sitting in the aisle. And they don't even care. They're just all over, you know. Well, they're not all over each other. They're not like getting sexy or anything. It's just grasping. I don't even think they're kissing at this point. It's just clutching each other and crying. And it's written very beautifully, and you can imagine it. You can imagine this emotional, just kind of a meltdown that they're having. And that's what I imagine would happen when you see someone that you love desperately and you've never loved anyone like them before, and then you see them again after 20 years apart. I imagine that that's the reaction you would have, not a measured reaction, not a held back emotional reaction, but the emotion, I don't think you would be able to stop it. It would be too much to hold in. And that's what it was in the book. Then he notices that he's sitting in the aisle. Then he gets up and he takes his pants off, and you know, he does ask her to kiss him, or him. He asks if he could kiss her, and she says yes, and they kiss. In the book, you kind of get the impression it's a nicer, more passionate kiss than what was shared on the show. He does talk about seeing her so many times, seeing her beautiful hair curled around her lovely face, all this good stuff, just like on the show. He says all that. And he says, but you never touched me. And that's how he knew she was real, when she touched him. Like I explained the last episode in the book, rather than him passing out immediately, he was talking to her thinking that he was having a vision. And he not knowing that she was real until she touched his nose or his face. And then he jerked back, you know. That's how he knew in the book. Much sweeter. I just wanted that. Oh God, I wanted that. That's what I wanted. And to have it changed, I think was a mistake. That's just my opinion, though. Some people might feel differently. Anyway, after the whole Jordy scene, Claire asks him if he has another pair of pants. And Jamie says, yeah, in the back. And he asks her to come with him, and they go to the back where he has a little cot and a little chair. A very sparsely decorated room. And he gets some pants and puts them on. And then Jamie says, you know, Claire, I think he starts to say something, but then it comes to him and he says, our child. And she smiles and she takes out this plastic wrapped little package out of her pocket. And she says, I have these that I wanted to show you. They're of our daughter. And Jamie says, our daughter? She says, yes. And he approaches her, takes the packet from her, or the, she takes the pictures. It's pictures. So she takes them out of the packet, and he looks at them, and he's like, what the devil? And she's like, they're called photographs. They're taken with this thing called a camera. It captures your likeness, but instead of with paint, it does it with light. And she comparing it to a painting, but it captures your image with light. And so, you know, Jamie looks at them, and he says, in order for me to see these, I'm going to have to use, and he takes some little specs out of his pocket and he puts them on. He's very self-conscious, which is adorable. And he says, you know, I only need these for like reading and stuff and seeing small stuff, trying to excuse it, you know. And she says, you still look as dashing as ever. And he says, so I don't look like an old man? She's like, no, no, you don't. And then she touched her hair self-consciously, and she says, I actually have some gray, but I dyed it. She says, I wanted to look like I did the last time you saw me. And he says, age doesn't matter. The years don't matter. He touched her cheek. He says, you'll always be beautiful to me. So then he says, now show me my daughter. And he puts his glasses on and he looks down at the first picture, and it's of Claire holding a baby Brianna in his arms. He gets a little choked up, sits on the bed, the little bed. It's a tiny, tiny bed. And Claire sits next to him. And he looks like he's about to cry, but we never see any tears. I don't know if this is a deliberate thing, or maybe Sam was just having trouble getting them tears to come. I'm not sure what it was. I would like to have seen some tears, though, because in the book, lots of tears. Jamie is very emotional at seeing the pictures of his daughter, and he cries openly when he sees those photos. So to see Sam get emotional, but you don't quite get the tears, a little disappointing. That's just me, though. Maybe I'm just expecting too much. This part of the story of Outlander, all the books. This is my favorite. This is my absolute favorite part, the reunion. And so I had big expectations, probably too big. That's probably why I'm disappointed. I was expecting too much. I was expecting perfection. And to get what I interpret as less is disappointing. But anyway, so then he starts skimming through the other photos. There's one of Brianna. He asks, after seeing the baby picture, he asks, what is her name? And Claire says, Brianna. And then he goes, Brianna. And he kind of looks off like he's reflecting on it. Then he looks at Claire, what an awful name for a wee lass. And Claire's like, no, it's not. It's a beautiful name. Besides, you asked me to name her after your father, Brian. And he was like, yes, okay, Brianna. So, and another thing I noticed at this point was, when Jamie's wearing those spectacles and then he takes them off, puts them back on, takes them off, puts them back on, it's very, not old man-y, but it's kind of, it's definitely very telling of his age and that he has aged, and he's acting more like a daddy or maybe even a granddaddy at this point. And I liked it. It was so cute. I liked it. And I thought Sam was working the hell out of that role. He was at that point. I'll give it to Sam. He was putting that old man air on. And I appreciated it. The way he was looking at through those little spectacles down at the pictures. Very cute. Very cute. But anyway, then he starts to move through the photos, and he sees the photo of Brianna at age 7 with Claire, and then a picture of her as a preteen, I think, with an axe, like she was chopping wood. And I think he asked Claire, so what were her first words? What's she like? And Claire was like, well, her first word was dog. And then no. And he says, oh, yeah, they learned the no one really fast. So then he saw a picture of her with a big dog. And he says, what kind of dog is that? Because it was a big black dog. And Claire says, this is Newfoundland. And then he gets the one with her with the axe. He says, oh, she cuts wood. And Claire says, yes, she does. It gets pretty cold in Boston, just like in Scotland. And then he comes across a color photo, because the other pictures were black and white. Then he comes across a color photo of Brianna sitting on the beach in a bikini with a young boy next to her. And Jamie quickly takes his glasses off and looks away from the picture. He's like, oh my gosh. He says, why would she be wearing something like this and next to a lad? And Claire is like, it's a bikini. It's normal. It's nothing, not a big deal. All the girls wear them in 1968. And he says, he didn't like that. He was a little disturbed by it. So then he moves on to the next picture, and it's a picture of Brianna pretty much close to the age that she currently is, holding up some little fish, I guess, after having gone fishing. And it's a really beautiful color photo. So he looks at it, and then he kind of pauses and he puts the pictures down or hands them to Claire. Then he stands up and walks across the room. So Claire's sitting there holding the pictures thinking, okay, it's a little lackluster reaction. And I'm thinking the same thing. Where are the tears? Why aren't you emotional? So anyway, she's like, look, if it's the bikini, look, that's normal. All the young girls wear those to the beach in 1968. It's not a big deal. So Jamie's like, no, Claire, there's something I have to tell you. So he reaches up and gets something off the fireplace mantle, and he sits down in a rocking chair in front of the fire. No, well, he doesn't sit down. First, he turns and faces her, and he says, I have a son. His name is Willie. And Claire, you know, she looks a little surprised, but mostly I think she looks a little disappointed. She kind of lowers her head. And then he says, it happened when I was in England with the Dunsany family. He sits down in the rocking chair and he says, Willie is a bastard. I can't tell anyone that he's my son. His mother died in childbirth. Claire says, did you love his mother? He says, no. Actually, I'm responsible for her death, maybe because I didn't love her. And Claire says, what's he like? And Jamie says, spoiled. You know, he's loud, obnoxious, you know, a brat, essentially. But then he says, and he's bunny and bra and strong. And Claire said, and he's yours. And Jamie said, and he's mine. So then Claire says, you know, I knew that while I was away, while we were apart, you would have had a life. And Jamie kind of looks thoughtful. Then he stands up again, goes by the fireplace, and then he turns to her and he says, Claire, did you leave Frank to come back here? And she says, no, Frank died a few years ago. And Jamie says, but he accepted you when you came back. He accepted you and the child. And she says, yes, he loved Brianna very much. He was a good father. And Jamie asks her if she was happy with him. And she says, I was happy raising Brianna with him. And let's see, what else did he say? I think he asks her, she just says that Frank was a good father and what have you, I don't know. But then Jamie hears the bells chiming, the time in the background, and he says, oh, he had forgotten about something that he had to do. He had to go to the tavern and he sits down and starts to put on his boots. He asks her, "Will you come with me?" And she says, "Wild horses couldn't keep me away." So then as we switch to a street view where they're walking down the crowded street, headed toward the tavern, and Claire is explaining to him what happened to Prince Charles, the Bonnie Prince. And she's telling him how he escaped Scotland dressed as a woman and his brother rescued him and they went to France. And that's where he currently should be. And then Jamie was like, "So then he's okay." And she says, "Well, he's alive now, but he's not living a very happy life." So then Jamie sees someone down, you know, a little ways, and he nods toward them, and Claire looks and sees this young man staring at her. And the young man says, "Milady." And Claire looks a little shocked at first, and then she goes, "Fergus." And then the young man approaches her and gives her a big hug and says, "Milady, you're here. You're alive. You have returned. God has restored you." And they're hugging, and it's really sweet. It's similar to what happens in the book. Although in the book, Fergus is much more elated. Of course, everyone in the book is more emotional. Everyone on the show is so measured. But I don't think Fergus's scene was that measured. It was kind of emotional. But in the book, he's crying. He's so elated. He even gets down on his knees in front of her and hugs her like that. And he's crying into her skirt. And it's really an emotional moment for Fergus in the book. Really super emotional. And at one point, I think he even picks her up and spins her around. She's pounding him on the back and all that. It's a really, really cute scene in the book. Anyway. So, I think he asked her where she's been. And she said she thought that Jamie was dead and she left and went to the colonies, after that. And that's where she's been all this time. And Fergus was just smiling at her, but there was something in his eyes that said something else was going on, but he didn't really know how to say it or express it. So then he says to Jamie, "I need to talk to you about Mr. Willoughby." And he gives Claire another hug. Fergus gives Claire another hug and, you know, expresses how happy he is to see her. Then he takes Jamie off to the side and tells him about, at first he says, "Is she going to be staying with you?" And Jamie's like, "Well, I hadn't really thought about that." And Fergus was like, "What about?" And Jamie was like, "I'll have to talk to," he says, "Well, I haven't had much time to think about that because with her showing up, I was just all about that. But now I think about it, I have to talk to Ned Gowan, who has to be, 90 now." Because as we remember, if any of you have seen the first two seasons, Ned Gowan is an attorney, a lawyer. Well, at least if you've seen the first season, Ned Gowan is an attorney, a lawyer that was working for the McKenzies that had, you know, been around, especially when they were collecting the rents and stuff like that, and also helped Claire during the witch trials in the first season. And he was a kind of elderly man then. So 20 years later, woo. I'm assuming back then Ned had to be in the 60s minimum. So now he's got to be 80s, most definitely. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if they show Ned, I hope they do, and how they handle his aging. That should be interesting. A lot more than just a little gray hair and some bronzer and some wrinkles. Huh? You're going to have to do a lot more than that to make Ned look like he's aged 20 years. But anyway, so he said he would have to consult Ned Gowan and see what the law says. At this point, we don't know exactly what he's referring to, but some of you might know, book readers know. Won't get into it any more than that. Anyway, Fergus then tells him about Mr. Willoughby. He's been drinking. He's causing some problems. And Jamie's like, "Okay, I'll go handle it." So then Fergus goes off somewhere and Jamie goes back over to Claire. Claire says, "Is everything okay?" Jamie's like, "Yeah, just an associate of mine that's in a bit of trouble. We got to go check him out." And Claire's like, and then Jamie said, I have to meet someone too, and I'm late. And Claire says, late because of me. And Jamie says, no, late because of me. So she says, well, where are we going? He says, to the World's End, which is apparently the name of a tavern. And when they get to this tavern, there's like a scuffle going on, a skirmish. There's a Chinese man who's apparently being kind of kicked around by this woman and knocked down to the floor. And when Claire says, don't tell me that's Mr. Willoughby. And Jamie says, oh, well, I wouldn't tell you, but that would be a lie. So he goes over, picks this Chinese man up off the floor, says, what have you been doing? What kind of trouble have you been getting into? Mr. Willoughby tries to explain. And then Claire walks up to, I guess, introduce herself. And then Jamie introduces her. Because Claire starts to say her name is Claire Randall, but then Jamie interrupts her and says, Malcolm, Claire Malcolm, this is my wife. So Mr. Willoughby looks at her like, wife, you know, he's apparently taken aback by this. Jamie's like, yes, my wife. So Claire says, it's really nice to meet you. Okay, so Jamie says he has to go off somewhere in the back to meet someone. And he says, Mr. Willoughby, behave and watch out for my wife. Mr. Willoughby says, sure. So Jamie goes back to the back. And Claire and Mr. Willoughby have a seat at a table. And Claire says, I'm assuming Mr. Willoughby is not really your name. And he goes, right, my name is Ying Chang Chung, but Jamie came up with Mr. Willoughby because apparently Ying Chang Chung sounds like a really distasteful Gaelic phrase or word, so he thought Willoughby would be more acceptable. So Claire kind of nods at this, and you know, they start to talk about things. And then the scene switches to Jamie going to the back of this tavern. There's a man in the back waiting for him. He says, I hope you don't think I like standing around these types of seedy establishments for my health. And Jamie's like, look, I don't know what you like to do. And the man's like, well, of course you don't know because you're seedy yourself. So Jamie tosses a little bag of coins onto a barrel. The man picks up the coins or the pouch and he says, this feels a little light, Malcolm. And Jamie says, that's what we agreed on. That's what I owe you. And the man is like, well, I hear you're selling your papers, not just on the high street, which is apparently where Jamie's supposed to stay. And apparently this man is some kind of tax collector and he's collecting his fee. But he's saying to Jamie that he heard he had been selling his papers on other streets as well. And if he's doing that, then that means he owes more tax. And the man says, the next time I see you, you're going to have to be paying me about 25% more than you're paying now. And Jamie's like, well, you can wait on that because I'm only selling on a high street. And the man said, okay, we'll see about that. He said, yeah, whatever. So Jamie leaves. And when he goes back out to the front, Mr. Willoughby is just wrapping up his story about how Jamie saved his life and that if it weren't for Jamie, he would be dead. And he was so appreciative and so thankful for Jamie. It sounds a little bit contrived, I will say, but that's the story that he's spinning to Claire. And when Jamie shows up, he's cutting his eyes at Mr. Willoughby like, what are you telling my wife? You know, you can see this look on Jamie's face of suspicion as he's looking at Mr. Willoughby. But Claire, being apparently completely unaware of this strange look and exchange between the two, she's saying, Mr. Willoughby was just telling me about how he was on a boat from China. And when he was at the docks, here from on the boat that you found him and he was half starved and near death and that you saved him. And Jamie was like, yeah, that's what happened. So Mr. Willoughby has this look on his face like, yeah. So there's more to the story there. There's something that's not being said. I guess we'll have to wait to find out what that is. So at this point, Jamie tells Mr. Willoughby that they have to be going and tells him to stay out of trouble. And Claire was like, it was nice to meet you. And she says his actual name, Ying Shang Chong. I hope I'm saying that right. I hope I'm not saying it wrong. But anyway, and he says something in Chinese to her. And she says, and Jamie, and she says, what does that mean? And Jamie answers, honorable wife. And Claire looks at him and says, Jamie, and she looks at Jamie, and she says, you speak Chinese. He says, I understand it a bit. So then she, says goodbye again, and Mr. Willoughby shakes his hand, and they leave. Now, in the book, Jamie actually speaks Chinese as well. It might be a little bit of Chinese or broken Chinese, but he's speaking Chinese to Mr. Willoughby as well. So he doesn't just understand it, he also speaks it. Because in the book, and this I think is also expressed somewhat on the show as well, that Jamie is like this linguist. He can learn damn near any language. He knows French. He knows, of course, Gaelic. He knows, German, I think he knows a bit. He knows Chinese. He can hear a language, and probably within a few days or weeks or whatever, he's picked it up. So he's really good at that. And it is expressed a lot in the book about how many different languages he knows and can learn very quickly. But I guess they're not going to do that in the show. They're just going to say that he understands it a little, but he doesn't speak it. Okay. So after the whole thing with Mr. Willoughby, Jamie decides to take Claire somewhere to sleep, eat, have dinner. And they end up walking into this establishment. Now, when they first arrive into this establishment, it's pretty clear this is not your average tavern or hotel or inn. It is it's very clearly a brothel, and the way that we know this is because there are naked people everywhere. They walk in, there's saloon music playing, if I remember correctly, and there are women and men just kind of hanging out, titties and asses and dick swinging. I'm like, whoa, okay. I don't think we got any full frontal nudity, but definitely a lot of titty, a lot of titty. All kinds of titties, big titties, little titties, flat titties, sagging titties, just titties, 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 titties everywhere. I'm like, okay. And at one point, they show the stairs, and this woman that we saw earlier in the show, who was helping Jamie straighten his stock, apparently this is where he had been, and had, started his day at this place. This woman who we see coming down the stairs is the woman that he had been talking to at the beginning of the episode. He goes over to her. And I forgot her name. I'm sorry. He says, Madam, whatever her name is. He gives her a kiss on her cheek. Mwah, mwah. The little French kiss. And she sees Claire standing kind of off behind Jamie. So she kind of looks at her, but doesn't really acknowledge her and kind of takes Jamie by the elbow and is like, I need to talk to you about something. She tries to pull him off. He says, okay, but first let me introduce you to my wife. And the woman looks at him and then looks at Claire, wife. Now, mind you, like I said, at the beginning of this episode, she's looking after him like she's attracted to him and she's flirting with him. So this has to be disappointing, to say the least. So he pulls Claire up and he says, yes, this is my wife, Claire Malcolm. Claire, this is Madame blah blah. So Clara says, nice to meet you. But Clara is clearly uncomfortable. There are people all around and they are doing all kinds of stuff in beds and couches all over the place. There's a couple in the background back there actually hitting. This guy's hitting it from the back. It's some serious stuff. This is like very Game of Thronesy. Very Game of Thronesy, you know, just like the brothel that Littlefinger has. That's what this reminds me of. Or oh God, I don't even want to say Crofter's Keep. Is his name Crofter? Crofter? Whatever it was. Remember the scene in the game, if any of y'all are Game of Thrones fans, where the Knights of the Watch took over the keep and was raping the girls. And but this wasn't rape. These were women in a brothel and everything was consensual. So anyway, it reminded me of that sort of thing. Either, you know, Littlefinger's brothel, maybe more like Littlefinger's brothel. So anyway, very out and about, just, you know, unhidden, just everybody just out there, just love. It's like a orgy basically going on. And Jamie is hilarious because he's standing there introducing Claire and got this little gentlemanly smile on his face like, oh, I don't see anything. Do-do-do-do-do. Hello, Claire. This is this lady who's letting me rent a room here. And Claire, this is this lady. And hi, how do you do? It's hilarious. It's just fucking hilarious because Claire's got this look on her face like, what in the hell? So anyway, the woman says, so you bring your wife here, you know? Well, she doesn't say it so much. She says, okay. She's obviously taken aback that he has brought Claire to this place. He says, yes, I'm just going to take her up to my room and we're going to have dinner and, you know, what? So the woman's like, okay, whatever. Okay. And she says to a maid, take her some hot water and some towels or whatever and make sure they get dinner. The woman said right away, and she leaves, and they go upstairs, Claire and Jamie. The woman is looking after them. She's obviously disappointed, I guess, that Jamie's married. Because, I mean, it's pretty clear at this point that this woman had eyes on him herself, but whatever. You know, not likely that Jamie would ever have really any eyes for a madam, but who knows? After a few, I mean, the way that he was flirting her at the beginning of the episode, he might have been thinking about it. So Claire might have showed up just in time. Anyway, so they go to this room. It's funny because, you know, the room is, you know, got a nice big bed, you know, at least big compared to the cot that he had at the print shop. But, you know, there's a table and there's, you know, decor and, you know, it looks decent, you know, nothing wrong with it. But you can hear people through the walls getting their freak on. And I'm like, what? So you mean to tell me that they got to get to know each other again in a room where folks are getting their freak on next door and you can hear it through the walls? That's, oh, no, no. And they're standing in the middle of the room. Claire looks so uncomfortable. And Jamie, he starts finally to realize that this might not have been the best idea. So Jamie's like, yeah, this is a room that they give me because I do business with the owner, you know, of this establishment. And in return, she lets me rent a room and, you know, not rent, but, you know, she lets him have a room because some nights he's doing business pretty late and doesn't have time to go back to the print shop where he has a cot. So he just stays there. He eats dinner there and it's really convenient. Claire is like, why do you have a room in a brothel? He says, look, I'm not, you know, doing anything that you might be thinking, okay? This is just strictly business. I'm not her customer, if that's what you're thinking. She's mine, and she's a good customer. And then he's like, you know what? This probably wasn't a good idea. So Claire is like, okay, look, I'm chill. Don't worry. I just wanted to know. This just seems kind of suspect, you know. This is basically what she's saying. So he's like, no, no, nothing suspect about it. It's just business. I'm not a pimp. I'm not doing anything I shouldn't be doing, you know. And she says, well, you know what? If you was, it wouldn't be any of my business anyway. He said, isn't it? Isn't it, Claire? So Claire asks, why do you have a bed or a room at a brothel? Is it because you're such a good customer? And Jamie says, no, I am not a customer. Madame Jean, or whatever her name is my customer, and she's a good one. I do business with her, and she rents or gives me a room because I'm often out late, and this is a good place to come to have a bed and something to eat, and it's just a lot more comfortable than my cot at the print shop. So Claire is, you know, still looking around, we're still hearing the moans in the background, and Jamie's like, maybe this wasn't a good idea. But, you know, Claire is, you know, she's chill, you know, she's, or at least she's trying to be. And then Jamie asks her, Claire, why did you come back? And Claire says, why do you think I came back? He's like, did you come merely to bring me word of my daughter, or did you come to be with me? And he says, I am no longer the man that I once was. But, you know, if you want to be with me, is that something that you can deal with, essentially, is what he said. And she's like, well, yes, I can. I'm here because of you. I came back to be with you. And how do you know I'm not a bad person? You know, I could be someone... No, wait a minute. I'm skipping. So she did say, you know, No, I'm not skipping. She says, how do you know I'm not a bad person? And he says, I don't think, I care if you were. And she said, neither do I. And then they started to kiss, and then there was a knock at the door, and dinner is here, and this maid comes in with their food, and you know, they get their meal for the night. So they sit down, they eat. Claire's narrating this part where she's talking about how they talk and they get to know each other. They eat slowly, and they savor each other as much as the meal. Learning about each other again and carefully filling in the blanks from the time that they were apart. Although the visual is just them slowly eating and gazing at each other. They're not talking at all. You know, and they seem to have something like fruit, grapes, and some bread. I'm like, okay, that doesn't seem very filling, but whatever. So after they're done with this part, Jamie puts his napkin aside and says, so will you come to bed with me then? And Claire smiles and she says, yes. So they get up, and it's reminiscent of the wedding episode where they start to slowly undress each other. Jamie's helping her with her outfit that she made, and she's helping him with his shirt. And eventually she gets his shirt off. He gets her jacket and her vest off. And then he gets to her bodice, and there's a zipper on it. He's like, what is this? And she said, it's a zipper. Just pull the tab and pull it straight down. So he pulls it down. It releases, and she's down to her shift. And he reaches and undoes her shift, and it drops to the floor, and she's naked. Now, for a 40-some-year-old woman, which she's supposed to be, who's had a baby, she looks absolutely stunning. And Jamie looks at her, and he's staring, and she gets self-conscious suddenly. She covers herself. She says, well, say something. And he's like, you're the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. And she scoffs, and she says, well, you really are going blind. And he just kind of smiles, and she finishes undressing him, and then he's naked, and you're like, well, okay, now what? They're very awkward. So then they move over to the bed, and they kiss, I think, they hug, and they kiss, and groping each other, and then they move over to the bed, and he lays her on it and then kind of crawls over her, and he goes in for a kiss, but she's raising her head at the same time, and they kind of smash faces, and his head crashes into her nose. So it's very reminiscent of what happens in the book. This does happen in the book as well. And he goes, "Oh, sorry, did I hurt you?" And she's holding her nose. She says, "I think I broke my nose." And he says, "No, you didn't. It would be bleeding, and it makes a horrible crunching noise, and you'd be bleeding like a pig if it were broken." So then he gives it a little kiss, and then they start, you know, going at it again. And then he tries to lift her up on the bed, and he drops her, and she crashes down on the bed kind of hard, and oof. And he said, "Oops, sorry." So she's like, "It's okay." And they're giggling at this point. So then he just kind of gets serious. He starts kissing her around her breast and up her neck. And he's going in. And then they start getting wild. And they start kissing really hungrily. And then they pull apart. And she looks at him and she says, "Do it now. Do it and don't be gentle." So then he just jabs into her. And then they start going at it. Oh, boogada, 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 you know. So he's going in. It's lots of pumping and lots of grunting. And she's like, "Oh, oh." So it's a pretty hot sex scene. I will give him that. It's okay. The sex scene lasts for a good little while for them. Because usually the sex scenes are what? Like 5 seconds and then it's over. Like 3-4 pumps. Boom. He's gone. But this time it lasted for, I don't know, a full minute, I think. Didn't it? I don't know. I didn't time it. But it lasted a while, you know, for it to be show sex, you know. Then when he was, you know, getting ready to finish, he said, "Oh, God, Claire." And then that's it. And then he rolls over and they cuddle, and you know, that's the end of that. Show and book comparison, because this is a big moment. It was a huge moment in the book. Okay, am I disappointed? Yeah. I am disappointed how this goes, because this was a huge moment in the book, because it was, yes, awkward initially. They did do the head bump and the nose and all that stuff, and all that did happen. But then when they got to the moment of the sex, she did say to do it, you know, and he pushes in, but he freezes. And she tells him to move, you know, and I don't think he can. He's frozen. I guess because it feels so intense, he can't move. And she tries to move under him, and he tries to hold her still. Then he's able to start moving, and it doesn't take much. She starts to climax, and then when she climaxes, her muscles contract and kind of milks him. And then as this is happening, he just goes, "Oh, Claire. Oh, God." And then he starts to climax. And then she says she felt drops of water. It could be sweat, could be tears coming from him. So, okay, you just heard what I just said, right? That's what was in the book. Very emotional. Not a lot of pumping and grinding. Just a really intense, very simple, but very intense experience. He didn't have to do much. it was so intense though. And they were so ready for each other that it didn't take all that bumping and grinding. It just took a few intense strokes. And she was gone. And then he was gone. And that was it. And then the tears come. Like, oh, Jesus. You know, that's intense. You don't have to you don't have to do all that. It's not necessary. This was their very first moment together intimately. And it didn't have to be that. That can come later, which it did in the book, because they had sex all night. But that first time, yeah, of course, because neither one of them had sex in so long. How are you going to last that long to do all that? You know, you haven't. And then you're with someone who's that important to you that you haven't seen in so long, and you're finally reconnecting intimately like that. Yeah, you're going to pop off in a few seconds. It's because it's going to be not just physical. It's going to be emotional too. So that was something again that I was disappointed by on the show, as opposed to what happened in the book, because what happened in the book to me is what is more telling of their emotion and of their physical, desperation for one another. What happened on the show did not imply physical desperation. It implied, you know, just lust. Yeah, I just want to, you know, get in here and let's do this, and it's sex, and then yeah, I'm going in and I'm hammering it home, and all that's well and good. I'm just saying, how does he have the stamina to last that long the very first time when he hasn't had sex in God knows how long? And this is Claire. This ain't Geneva Donsaney. This is Claire. It's Claire. You know, so I don't know. My opinion, I don't know. I guess other people might feel differently, but that's what I thought. Anyway, when it's over, they, you know, lay up in bed and start talking. And I think Claire says something along the lines of, what did he do for a living? That just comes up. What does he do? And he told her to guess. And she said, well, I would say that you're not really a princer because your body is too fit. You know, he gets up out of bed and goes over to the table to get something more to eat. And she's observing him. She says, yeah, a printer doesn't have a body like that. Look at all those muscles. You don't get muscles like that from running a printing press. And he looks at her and he says, have you tried to run one? She says, no, but still, you know, I just have a feeling you're doing more than just printing. And he says, like what? He sits down at the table. By the way, he's displaying his body, and it's just very hot, very sexy. Anyway, she says, well, are you, she said, well, the last time I was with you was a trader. He says, yo, I'm still a trader. He says, I just haven't been into prison recently. And he explains to her how he was in prison before for treason, and he spent several years there. And she says, yeah, I know. I read all about that. And what else? Oh, God. Anyway, he admits to her that he's been arrested several times in the past 2 years for different crimes, different acts of treason or what have you, or being a traitor or something. I don't know. Some other word too. I think it has to do with his papers that he's printing and the material that he's printing. So he sits on the bed next to her and he says, so do you want to go back now? She says, no, I don't. I'm here to stay. I don't care. You know, so they lay down again. He gets back in bed with her and they go in for some more intimacy. And, you know, this time it's slow and deliberate and very, very romantic. So then by the morning when Claire wakes up, She notices that Jamie is not in bed. She looks over and sees that he's in a chair getting dressed. And she's like, "Where are you going?" He's like, "I don't want to leave you, but I have a lot to do. You stay here and I will be back later." And he gives her a kiss and then he leaves. And as she's, you know, kind of pampering around the room a little later, there's a knock on the door. And this young man comes in and he says, "Are you James or Alexander Malcolm's woman?" And she says, "I guess I am. Who are you?" He says, "I'm Ian Murray. I was just looking for him, but if he's not here, I'll come back." And he was about to leave. She says, "Murray, wait a minute, hold on." And she grabs her, you know, blanket and wraps it around her. She says, "Did you say Murray? As in Jenny and Ian Murray's son?" And he said, "Yes, ma'am. How'd you know that?" And she says, "Well, I knew your parents a long time ago." And she thinks about it for a moment. She says, "I'm Claire. I'm Jamie's wife." And he goes, "Claire, you mean the woman that went away after Culloden, but you're dead?" And he's like, "Well, no." She's like, "No, I'm still alive. I'm still here." And he's like, "Oh, when Uncle Jamie came back to Lallybroch after Culloden and you weren't with him, everybody thought that you had died or maybe went back to the fairies. Is that where you've been, with the fairies?" She said, "No, I went to the colonies, and that's where I've been. I thought he was dead, but when I found out he wasn't, I came back." And he's like, "Oh, that's great." And then he has this look similar to what Fergus had, you know, this kind of look like, "Okay, well, that's interesting." And then he excuses himself some kind of way because he has to go take care of something or whatever. So he leaves. And then later we see this group of women, I guess the hookers that work at the establishment. They're down at the breakfast table below eating, and Claire comes downstairs, sees these women eating. They see her. They go, "Oh, you must be the new girl." So she comes down to join them. She tries to explain at first. "I'm not." "No, no, come down, honey, and have some breakfast." She says, "Looks like you had a rough night." One of the girls looks at her and says, "You know, you look a little older than what Madame Jean usually likes. She usually likes no one older than 25. So Claire, you know, taking a little bit aback, just doesn't say anything and sits down to eat. So they give her some food. She starts grubbing. And then they're like, "Oh, look at her. She's blushing." You know, I don't know. First they say, "Oh, was your customer rough? Your neck, you got all kinds of marks on your neck." So Claire kind of rubs her neck a little bit. And then the other girl says, "And the way you were walking, and you seem like you're a little sore between the legs. He must have gave you quite the workout." So Claire kind of, you know, blushes. And then they go, "Oh, look, she's blushing. She's so brand new. That's so cute." So they're teasing her and stuff. And, you know, they're giving her a little advice about things to do with the men or whatever. And then there's this, I guess, person that comes to the door. And then the girls are like, "Oh, I hate when they come during breakfast. You can barely digest your food good." And the girl that had commented on Claire's age says, "Well, don't worry. Claire's going to have to get them because she's new. And the new one has to get the customers nobody else wants." So Claire looks at her and is like, "Okay." So anyway, the lady, Madame Jean, she comes downstairs and she sees Claire sitting down there with these ladies. And she's like, "What are you doing down here, madam?" And Claire's like, "Eating." So the woman's like, "Did no one bring you breakfast?" Claire says, "No." And the woman says, "Oh, that worthless maid will have her flayed." And Claire's like, "No, don't worry about it. I'm good." And she, you know, took another bite of something and took another drink of her tea or whatever. And she says, "It was nice meeting you, lady." And they're all looking at her like, "Oh, okay. Guess she wasn't a hooker. Oh, well, our bad." So then, you know, Clara goes back upstairs and Madame Jean is giving her that look again, like, I don't like you, as Clara goes up to the stairs. When Clara gets up to the room again, though, there's someone in it. And a man, and he's rummaging through things, throwing papers and stuff all over the floor. And Clara says, "What are you doing in here?" And he's like, "Oh, don't ask me any questions, ho. I won't be talked to like that by a hooker. Just get on that bed and earn your coin and wait for me while I finish looking for something." The man said, and Clara's like, "I think there's some mistake. This is my husband's room." And the man was like, "Husband? Oh, okay. So, well, then why don't you tell me where your husband keeps his ledgers?" And the woman is like, "I'm not telling you." Well, Claire, the woman. But Claire is like, "I'm not telling you anything. What are you doing here? Get out of here." And he's like, "Oh, you don't know where it is? Well, maybe if I fuck you, you'll have your memory jarred." And she looks at him and he grabs her and she screams. And then it goes to credits. And that's the end of the freaking episode right there. I'm like, what? Kidding me, right? Right, y'all. That's where y'all gonna end it. Damn. So I didn't like that. I did not like that. Okay. That's another thing that kind of frustrated me about this episode. That's kind of a messed up place to end the show, but that's where they ended. Cliffhanger. Now we gotta wait till next week to see what that was about. Okay, general idea of the whole episode. Like I said before, I was happy that we're back with a new episode. I was happy that we did the reunion. I was happy generally with the episode. If I had to rate it, let's say out of a score of 5 stars, I'd give it a 3. I hate to say 3, but I would. I got to take 2 stars away because there were just too many other things that I didn't like. I didn't like the cliffhanger ending. I didn't like the reunion, the initial reunion. I thought it was too held back, not emotional enough. I didn't like the sex. I thought because the books were so brilliant, they should have kept that. They shouldn't have changed it. Should have kept that. It was just so poignant in the book. And in the show, it wasn't. It just fell flat. It was just sex. There was nothing meaningful or emotional or extreme about it. The book first sexual contact that they had after 20 years was so poignant and so emotional. And the fact that it wasn't the usual, you know, bump and grind that they usually got into, but it was just a couple of moves. It didn't take but a couple of pumps, because that's how tightly wound and how anxious they were. And just from a few movements, they were both falling apart. And that is poignant to me. That's what they should have kept. That's what they should have did. That I could relate to that. You know, I've been there. Trust me. I know what that shit is. So they should have kept that. And I don't know why they changed it. It was a mistake. It was a mistake. But anyway, great episode anyway. I still liked it. I'll be watching it some more. Maybe it'll grow on me more. But at this point, I'm sorry. I got to get it a 3 out of 5. It just could have been better. But hopefully next episode will be, back to the usual high quality. My disappointment is still me being happy with the show. Trust me, I still love the actor, still love everything about the show. I just felt like this episode should have followed the book a little more than it did. All right, guys, I am out of here. I will see you guys next week with the 8th episode of Bannocks, Bonnets, and Kilts as we recap episode 7, which I think is called, let me double check. Let me double check at what next week's episode is called. Creme de Meth. Creme de Menthe? Menthe? I don't know. But that will be episode 7 next week, October 29th. Until then, catch y'all later. Have a good one. Bye.